The following podcast is part of the Never Nervous Network, a podcast network showcasing the best and brightest new shows coming out of Louisville, Kentucky. Catch up on all the local haps with the Never Nervous podcast. Get your horror movie fix with The House by the Video Store. Discuss hot button topics with the Parade of Horribles podcast. Hear an actual conversation on actual conversations, and then get wild with me, Sean Thriller Smith, on the Sean vs. Wild podcast. The Never Nervous Podcast Network is available on iTunes, so like, subscribe, rate, and review. Keep up to date on everything going on in Louisville, Kentucky with the Never Nervous Network.
What's up, and welcome everyone to the first half of a special two-part episode of Sean vs. Wild. I'm your host, Sean Thriller Smith. You already knew that. Today, I'm sitting down with a man that I consider one of my best friends in the whole world, a guy that a little over 13 years ago now, the big 1-3, I happened to meet him by chance through a mutual friend, and we decided to start a band, and we've been partners in crime ever since. I'm talking about Kevin Fletcher. You know him, singer of Aha Baby, yeah, singer of every band I've pretty much been in, and we're going to be taking you back to that day and working our way through our 13 years together. We're going to be sharing some great memories, some funny stories from the past, and for all you listeners out there, we're doing something extra special. I wanted this to be an extra special episode, so we are going to be playing on this show songs from our previous bands. So you're going to hear how we started and where we ended up. Some of these songs, I know personally, I haven't heard in years, so it was a lot of fun getting to do that on this show. It's sort of a rise and fall of Aha Baby Yeah type episode. We've been planning on doing something like this for months now, just to help give our friends, you know, we never called them our fans, give our friends out there a little something extra, a little thank you, and also a little closure for them and for us as we transition now out of Aha Baby Yeah and into new directions in our lives. Kevin talks about, briefly, he'll talk about his new band, Summer Youth, and, you know, of course, I have this podcast, so that's kind of where we are now, and we started promoting it on the band Facebook page, so this is the first time I've ever kind of utilized the band Facebook page to draw attention to my show. So if you stumbled upon here through the UHBY Facebook, thank you for checking it out. You're going to hear some awesome stories today. We couldn't fit every single awesome story into the two parts. So I told Kevin already, you know, we definitely got to have him back on the show in the future, and we'll play some of the new Summer Youth jams for you guys too when he comes back. I've heard the demos already because I am VIP like that. I'm not trying to cool brag you right off the bat, but just trust me when I say you don't want to sleep on Summer Youth. You're going to definitely want to check them out. Yeah. So also want to just touch on that the web store that I promised last week is up. Should be up by the time that you hear this. You can check out the sweet new merch at seanversuswild.bigcartel.com. It's a big cartel. Everyone's got a big cartel, so pretty easy to find. seanversuswild.bigcartel.com. T-shirts and koozies featuring my new Teen Wolf-inspired logo. Shirts are in black and a nice heathered gray. Koozies are in electric banana yellow, tubular teal, and Metallica's self-titled album black. So please pick something up. If you're local, save yourself the shipping. Save yourself the time. Message me for the local pickup and pricing options. I'll make sure that you get a good deal, okay? Cool? Cool. And yeah, and I tell you what, we're going to just jump right in here with Kevin. Before we do that, allow me to take care of some business, though. Let me thank Audiophile Inc. for sponsoring the show. Audiophile Inc. is where Kevin and I got all of our merchandising printed through a majority of our career. If you have any of the old school Heartbreak Kid, Monroe, Creatures, the first runs of Aha Baby Yeah shirts, they were all printed through Shane. It was the best deal in town. I know my Heartbreak Kid t-shirt still looks good as hell, and it's almost a decade old. That's the quality you're going to get with Audiophile Inc. They can print your shirts, your sweatshirts, your under pantaloons, business cards, banners, hats, whatever you need. They've got your back. They ship to all 50 states. So to my homeboys out there, go to audiophileinc.com and get the hookup from Shane. Tell him you heard about it here on the Sean vs. Wild podcast. Again, that's audiophileinc.com, A-U-D-I-O-P-H-I-L-E-I-N-K Supernatchstudios.com. Also got to thank Joe Brock and Supernatch Studios for booping dials every single week. I know that Joe recently had to rain check on his trip to Six Flags just to make sure that this two-parter came out sounded like $100. So thanks, Joe. And thank you guys for listening. If you like what you hear, as always, like, share, subscribe, and rate. Those ratings on iTunes are super important. To break it down, the more ratings you get, the higher my rank gets, which means the more people see my show, which means the more listens and downloads, which means more sponsors, which means more money to put back into the show, which means more content for you. So if you haven't, please, please give that 5-star rating on iTunes. I've got big, big plans for the show. So I would definitely appreciate that. And all right, guys, that's going to be enough for me today. Get ready to take a trip down memory lane with Kevin Fletcher and myself. Strap in and let's get wild. But yeah, so last night I watched two movies, one that I didn't have any expectation for and it was awesome, and then the other one I thought was going to be good and it really let me down. And
what'd you watch?
I watched John Wick. I had no expectation for, watched it, awesome. Would definitely recommend checking it out. But then I watched the new Ghostbusters movie. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
Your thoughts?
I didn't hate it. It's kind of one of those things where you watch a movie and you're like, yeah, I saw that. It was all right. I don't hate it. I didn't love it. It was just kind of there.
To me, it was like kind of being on a sinking ship where, like, the second that the movie started, I laughed like 4 or 5 times. Like, maybe within the first 5 minutes, I laughed, and then it was like, oh, my boat, it sprung a leak. And then by the end of it, I was dead because I had drowned. It was hard for me to get through.
I thought the best part about the movie was the blonde chick from Saturday Night
Kate
Live.
McKinnon.
Yeah, her.
She was probably the best. It relied very heavily on their one-liners, and I was like, man, none of these are funny. Like, I'm trying super hard to laugh, and sometimes I was even like, ha ha. That was totally fake.
That was
so I was like, oh, okay, I have to give it what it is. I was not into it, but. I mean, I like the cast, but I was just like, man, that script did not do them any justice.
Well, I don't think none of the original like team writers or anybody was part of it, were they?
I don't know. It seemed very ad-lib to me because it didn't seem like there was hardly any scenes where anybody was actually acting and progressing the story. More so, it was like, all right, you guys just ad-lib and do some one-liners, but now you're in the station. Now you're on the city. Now you're in the subway.
They more have relied on the fact that it had the Ghostbusters name, I think, and just expected people to either love it or hate it, I think.
Yeah. It was like watching Super Mario Brothers. Remember that? Remember when I told you about...
You remember that giant pile of garbage?
True story, guys, listeners out there. I saw the Super Mario Brothers movie in the theater when I was a kid. And I remember, like, nobody... Like, all of our family was going to go and watch the movie or go to the movies together. And I demanded. I was like, I have to see the Super Mario Brothers movie. Threw a fit. And then by the end of it, I just cried. Because I knew that it was... horrible.
Funny story that Phoenix actually, he's actually kind of still in that Mario kick or whatever. And I remember when he first like figured out what Mario was and got real into it. And I thought it'd be funny to like be like, yeah, you really like Mario. Hey, they made a live action movie, and he was real excited. And it was on YouTube.
Right.
And I put it on, and literally within, I don't know, maybe the first like 3 or 4 minutes, he just looked at me and goes, this sucks. He's 5.
Yeah. He knows. Dude, he knows. And that led me to this idea that I had today, because most people are like, well, you're probably comparing it to the original Ghostbusters. And honestly, the original Ghostbusters, I saw Ghostbusters 2 a lot when I was a kid because I feel like just the age that I was, Ghostbusters 2 was like always on the movie channels, not the first one. So I saw the second one a bunch, and I saw the first one a few times, but I'm not like really diehard about it.
I've definitely seen Ghostbusters 2 a lot more than I've seen Ghostbusters 1.
Yeah, but I'm just saying like I don't have like – my heart's not – in it. It's not like
it's not near and dear to you.
It's not like Back to the Future. Like right. If they decided to remake Back to the Future, right? But I decided
on a scale of 1 to 10, how pissed would you be?
Dude, I came up with this idea today, listeners. An all female Back to the Future cast. Are you ready for this? Kate McKinnon, the same girl from Ghostbusters, she's gonna play Doc Brown.
Okay.
And then we'll just get like
you know, Chloe Grace Moretz or somebody that's young and that's in a bunch of movies, she'll be the Marty McFly character. So check this out. She goes back. It takes place in 2015. She goes back to 1985, and all the roles are reversed. So the mom is like real nerdy and like spying on her dad, right? So like the roles are reversed there.
Right.
And then like, you know, she pushes her mom when her mom, of course, is going to fall out of a tree. She's going to push her out of the way. She's going to get ran over by her dad's car. And I was like, there's going to be a scene in it where it's like, hi, Victoria. That's your name, right? Victoria's Secret. It's written all over your underwear. That's where it's going to sell. Guys, copyright 2017, Sean Smith, the Back to the Future remake, all female cast.
Fell out of Boo Radley's apple tree.
Out of Boo Radley's apple tree. All right, guys, this is the Sean vs. Wild podcast. I'm your host, Sean Thriller Smith, in the Smithsonian today. Kevin Fletcher, longtime friend of mine. We've been playing music together since
2004.
And we have an elaborate past and an elaborate present because we also work together.
Yeah.
So we are always hanging out. And, man, I'm glad that you decided to be on the show today.
Yeah, dude, I really appreciate you bringing me in. For a while there, I was kind of like, I guess he's not going to invite me
to
do
this. Well,
you
know what? I guess I'm just chopped livers. Yeah, dude. Well, and I want to make this episode like a nice retrospective because we have, you know, 13 years of musical history.
A lot of history.
So we've been playing together for a long time. And now you've got new projects that I'm not a part of, but you got a new group called Summer Youth.
Yep, sure do. And you've got a new podcast.
And I've got a new podcast.
I'm not involved with, except for
until
today.
Now. Until now. So maybe I'll do some guest tambourine on some of your recordings or something.
There you go. That way we come full circle.
We'll just trade off. So what's been new with you? Like, how's your new projects going? How's life going for you?
New project's going great. Playing with a bunch of dudes that, oddly enough, I kind of just watched the guy who's playing drums with me. His name's Chris Doty, and didn't even know that we were friends on Facebook. And he posted some drum videos of him doing like drum covers, like Under Oath and stuff. And I was like, dude, this guy's really good.
So right.
I sent him a message and was just like, hey, man, would you want to jam sometime? And that's kind of how it took off.
Dude, God bless the internet when like you can just see people out there making moves and you're like, hey, can we be a part of this?
Can we jam?
I do the same thing. If I see somebody cool like making awesome music, I'm like, hey, can you be on my show, please?
Right? Yeah. You just got to reach out, man. You can't. I mean, the internet has definitely closed that gap.
Guys, if you haven't noticed it already, the internet is where it's at, man. Jeez.
If you don't have one.
If you don't have the internet, I highly recommend you picking one up.
You should get one internet.
Yeah, at least one. At least one Wi-Fi. Check it out. So it's you, it's Chris Doty, and Chris Armstrong from our past. He's playing with you.
Original bass player of pretty much all of our projects.
Yeah, I think he started out playing bass originally, yes.
And Tears Like Bullets, 2004. Represent.
Monroe?
Yeah.
Heartbreak Kid?
Yep, Monroe, Heartbreak Kid.
Creatures,
uh-huh, baby, yeah. And then off he went. Into the wild blue yonder.
So it's Chris Doty, Chris Armstrong.
And Chris Goins. It's Kevin and the Chris's.
Kevin and
we're
going
to change the band name real soon.
I'm thinking it's catchy. There's something to that.
There's something there. Kevin and the Chris's. Yeah. That's just all we're missing is me with an acoustic guitar and a bass drum.
Yeah, just kicking that bass drum. Solo mission. I actually found that on Twitter the other day, or on Facebook, like Time Hop. My status was like, hey, how can you tell if a band sucks? Count the number of bass drums the singer is kicking while playing an acoustic guitar, and if the answer is more than zero, they suck.
Well, you did the same thing, though, about drummers. You
yes,
like,
that's true.
Count
that's
the
a
number
generality.
Count the number of toms mounted to the bass drum. If the number is more than zero, the drummer is awful.
Yeah. But, you know, I can't get away with that now because, you know, if somebody played drums in the 80s or something like that and they have it all on their multiple bass drum kit and all that stuff, I'm like, oh, they're probably pretty good.
You can just determine by, you know, add the number of racks that they have. That
How many Gibraltar racks do you have?
If the answer is more than zero, you're probably not a very good drummer.
So I'm going to take, guys, speaking of Back to the Future, I'm going to take everyone back to the past, and then we're going to go to the future on this podcast today. So imagine this. You're in the Southern Indiana area, and it is 2004, February 1st, 2004.
Very significant date in my life.
It is. Your daughter was born on February 1st.
Yep.
A lot of big things on February 1st. But February 1st, 2004. My Garage, Otisco, Indiana.
Yep.
That's our very first.
West Carroll.
You, me, West Carroll, and Brad Rachel.
Yep.
And that's when Tears Like Bullets started.
Yep. We had, it was me, Sean, Chris, or well, me, Sean, Wes, because Wes and I were in high school together. And Sean, you kind of went to high school with us, sort of.
Yeah, but Wes had played with us in like my very first band. Wes was like randomly jammed with us.
He was that mutual between the two of us. Like we had seen each other in passing, but
right.
Wes was kind of that. He pulled us together and he was like, I want to play music with him. So he kind of pulled me in. And then we had Brad Rachel, who was with us for like
a month or two.
Yeah. And then I remember going to, you gave me Chris Armstrong's number.
Yeah.
And you were like, call him because he won't really respond to me.
Because I went to high school with Chris Armstrong.
And you were like, he won't really respond to me. So I called him. I remember being outside of your mom's house and I called him and I was like, yo, dude, you know, I've heard you're really good. You should play bass for us. We need a bass player. And he was like, no, man, I can't. And I was like, well, why not? And he said that he couldn't because he was playing in his dad's band.
He's playing in a band with his dad. Exit yeah. Zero.
And then I told him, bullshit. you're going to play bass with us. And then we ended up trying to like, I don't know, we like headhunted him because we went to the watch him play or something. We went to like New Washington High School or maybe it was Charleston. I don't even know.
It was New Washington at that point. Yeah, that's where me and Chris went to school together.
So I remember watching, like, he was in, like, the jazz band or something. Right. And we went and watched him play just so that when he got done playing, we called him up into the stands. And we were like, yo, dude, so about you playing bass. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a great memory. Just, like, you actually had to, like, go and put in the legwork and, like, convince people to be a part of your musical project.
Yeah.
You can't just email them.
We Fred Durst.
Yeah. But I remember when we first started, like our first day of practice, I remember like on the 28th of February that year was the Jeffersonville High School talent show. And we had to play three songs. So we spent 4 weeks writing three songs.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
wow.
And we got Dive, Asleep at the Wheel, and Super Kill, which sounds like an 80s cyborg cop movie
and
title.
It, I mean, if you hear the song, it probably was.
It probably was the song. Probably was the song.
Yeah. We were just a bunch of, I don't know, how old was I in 2004?
Well, was like I was 19. That was my senior year of high school. So, and I was not 18 yet, because I wouldn't turn 18 until May. So I was 17, and you're probably 18 or 19.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because, yeah. So I would say I was 18. I was 18 because I turned 18 in December of 2003. So, yep, 18 years old.
So, yeah, we practiced in a cold garage in February, no heat, wrote three songs, played the Jeff High Battle of the Bands.
Talent show.
And we split $100.
Del Paxton, a high school band.
That's wild.
Sounds wild.
If we win, we split $100. And we did.
We did. We won, and we split $100. And you know what we did? We bought beer with it.
We bought one case of Miller Lite. I don't even know how we acquired it. I don't even know.
I don't remember, yeah, what we did to acquire such.
Because we were all 17 at the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know how we got it. But I do remember going back to those apartments on 8th Street and being like, yes, we won. We did it. We have
whose apartment was it?
I don't even know. I don't even know whose apartment it was at the time now. Hmm. But yeah, and then
the one that I lived in with
yes.
Dino and that douchebag James.
Douchebag James, if you're listening, thanks for letting us have. That's probably who bought us the beer, honestly.
Yeah, no, it actually I guarantee it was. Guarantee it was. That guy was such a contributing to minors kind of guy. He loved it.
The cops, if you're listening. This didn't happen.
Didn't happen. Hey, I'm 32 now.
Hey, I'm 32 now.
There's a statute of limitations somewhere.
I'm still enjoying a good beer. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you for the tasty beer, actually. Sean hooked me up with a 16-ouncer of PBR.
Yeah, man, there's more where that came from, buddy.
Yeah, it's almost gone.
I figured it would be. Yeah, and that's pretty much how we started our band, Tears Like Bullets. But that was a pretty cool time in my life, honestly, playing those shows at PJ's Cafe that I randomly booked because no one else would like put on a show for us.
Well, do you remember how that kind of came about too? They were opening a new place there and I forget who it was, some girl that we were friends with who was working there. She was a server or going to serve, but they hadn't quite opened the place yet. And then we like went and talked to them because we wanted a place to do shows.
Right.
And they were like, well, we've never considered that, but sure, we'll give it a shot.
Man, those were great times because it would just be like anybody, like a who's who of music at the time. So like us, Edison J, which, I mean, their members went on to be in Foxbat and Light Treasons and everywhere else. And then you would have shows with Emmanuel.
Yeah.
And
who was then at the time Emmanuel Nice?
Emmanuel Nice. Suburban Blood Drive. The Merediths.
Yeah, the Merediths. What was that other?
Sacred Sorrow played.
What was that band with Matt?
Worse for Wear?
Worse for Wear.
Matt Kavarvik.
Matt Kavarvik.
Scott McEachran.
Yes, Scotty.
Who played with us briefly.
Briefly in Tears Like Bullets.
Briefly. The what I like most about the time that we had with Scott was, randomly, just another venue that we would play, and this ties into the Scott story, but that historic theater in Columbus, Indiana.
Yes, Crump.
The Crump Theater.
Yes.
That was an awesome place to play.
What was the name of that band that was from Columbus that you were, we had a good contact
with? Renaissance Affair.
The Renaissance Affair. There it is.
But Scott McEachran, we played this is like one of our last shows in TLB, but a great story nonetheless, because after we played at the Crump Theater, it was like a show that just had a lot of musical like acts or whatever on it at the time.
The audition played.
In the audition played,
they were not signed yet. They hadn't been picked up by Victory at that time.
Yeah, and I want to say like Gatsby's American Dream or some band like that.
It was something like
also.
That. Yeah. There were quite a few bands that actually played that show that went on to be a lot bigger than we ever did.
Than just Columbus, Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't reach like, you know, Mellencamp status, but
yeah. Well, you got Mellencamp tickets.
Yeah, that's true. I do. But the best part about that night was staying at Dainsky's.
Oh my God!
I have to bring up the Dainsky story. That was a great time.
Do you remember? Okay, so we'll come back to this because this is a great story. But do you remember years and years later, Silver Creek Bowling Lanes? He was in some band that was on tour and was actually hopped on a show there, and we didn't know, and they played, and he, sure enough, there he was, and it was just in all his glory, Dainsky's, the guy with a million girlfriends.
The man of a million girlfriends.
Well, do you remember how big of a chode he was when he was like showing us his MySpace page, and he was like, I got a girl in this state, I got a girl in this state.
Yep. So to set the scene, after one of our shows at the Crump Theater, with Scott McEachran, when he was playing with us at the time. So we're all like 18 at that point. I'd already graduated high school at that point. It was, so we go back to a house owned by this man Dane, whom we called Dainsky's, and it was like one of those things where he was like, "Yeah, man, you guys come on, hang out. We'll listen to music. We'll drink some beers and stuff, and it'll be a great time."
Yeah,
but it was a great time for us, and he just sat on his computer.
That was the only piece of furniture that he owned.
Yes. A treadmill.
Yes.
A treadmill, a DVD collection, and a laptop computer.
Yep.
With MySpace.
And a bathtub.
And a bathtub.
My man had a bathtub. I know all about it.
So, yes, I remember sitting down and he'd just be like, yeah, man, this new thing, MySpace, and I'm talking to girls from all over the country, and I've got a girl in every state that we go and tour in.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, this is my Indiana girlfriend and my Illinois girlfriend.
This is my Michigan girlfriend.
This is my Michigan girlfriend. And you're just like, okay, cool. Dane, you want to hang out with us? Oh, no, dude, it's cool, man.
Yeah, and then I remember he did, aside from the very limited amount of furniture that he had, he did have a stereo surround sound system of some sort, because I remember we jammed some serious loud tunage.
Yes, we did.
And he got pissed.
You know, we're just young kids, like, hey, you want to come over and listen to music? Like, yeah.
And drink beers?
And hang out? Like, yeah, I would love to. Oh, well, you're not going to participate? You're going to be on the slap top? That's going to be fun.
So I just remember, like, all of that, and then me and Wes going out on the front porch to smoke, and we're standing there, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, appear, like, four freaking cop cars.
Yes.
Just cherries and berries just flowing in through the front yard. And we're just like, oh shit, hit the deck. So we take off running through the house. And then, Sean, where did you go?
I was probably hiding somewhere. Or I was probably just in the house.
But like as soon as the cops,
but I know you, Wes, and Evan definitely ran.
Because well, me and I remember me and Wes running into the house, being like, "The cops are here! The cops are here!" And we took off through this back door. And what was crazy was the way that the back of his house was set up. There was no porch, so you go out the back door and you literally would almost fall out of it. And then there was a little walkway that went kind of to the left.
It's a walkway.
Mr. Walkway. But it went to the left, but then directly behind the house was like this little like garage or shed or something. And it was probably only about 6 feet away. So there was like no area. And then I remember like almost running into it and then going around and then running into the woods. And Wes got left behind and Evan and I took off. And we took off into the woods. And then as soon as we, you know, got into the woods quite deep, I just remember hearing Evan go, ah! And then I look behind me and there's no more Evan. And I'm just running and running. And then all of the sudden, my foot hits into this, like, pocket of sludge.
A sludge pocket.
It was a sludge pocket, if you will. My foot comes out of my shoe. And then I fall face first into what can only be described as a cesspool of human excrement.
it was doo-doo, baby.
It was a septic tank, y'all.
It was a cesspool.
So, and then I just remember hearing, "I saw y'all run back there." And I'm trying to be quiet. Evan's screaming in pain because apparently he like he stepped on like a barbed wire.
Yeah, he cut his foot up pretty bad.
Yeah, he cut himself really badly because Evan also lost his shoe.
Yeah, that was probably in the time when we would wear flip flops and roll our pant legs up really high.
Probably,
roll our girls' jeans up pretty high.
And I just remember finally conceding because I'm trying to hide and I'm like crouching down, but I'm still covered in human shit. And I'm just like. Finally, I was like, all right, sir, I'm coming. And as I'm walking toward him, I walk directly into Evan, who then, follows me out. And we just come out of the woods, and the flashlights are all up in our faces. And all of a sudden, you just hear laughter. And the policeman is dying. Like, he's literally looking at me, and he's crying. He's laughing so hard. And he's like, why did you guys run? And I was like, I don't know. I don't. And I'm just covered and just head to toe. And that was when I would go on tour, I would not bring a change of clothes.
Yeah, not too many changes.
So I'm standing there covered and he's just dying laughing. He goes, "You know, we weren't coming here to arrest anybody. We were just coming to tell you guys to turn it down." So, and then Wes, what the funniest part about the whole, aside from being covered in shit.
That's the hilarious part.
Yeah, let's get away from me. Okay. Wes, cause I asked him after the fact and I was like, "Yo, dude, where'd you go? What happened?" He's like, "Well, we all ran out the back door. I didn't see you guys take a right. I took a left following the walkway, but I fell out of the house, and the cop was literally coming around the corner at the same time. And he's like, and I fell down face first right in front of him. Where the fuck was I supposed to go?
I had nowhere to go at that point.
So fast forward a little bit. I had no change of clothes, so back to the bathtub.
Right.
I shed everything.
Yes, you did.
And I proceeded to try to wash my clothing in a bathtub because homeboy did not have a washer.
No washer or dryer.
So I'm like knuckles deep.
Had a treadmill though.
Knuckles deep, just like scrubbing dish soap into my clothes, trying to get this nasty stank out. And yeah, it didn't happen. I ended up, pretty much just going home in my underwear.
Your gym shorts.
Yeah.
Your reliable gym shorts.
The ones I still own. Yes. I still own them and I still wear them.
That is a tour staple for you, those gym shorts.
Those black and red ones. Dude, the crotch is like ripping out of them. They're like 13 years old.
Dude, classics never die. Some things you just can't throw away.
No, dude, I'll hold on to that. I'll cherish it forever.
Dude, TLB, those are great times for me. Like, it just seems like a more innocent time.
Well, we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
We had no idea what we were doing. But it seemed like we were actually doing a pretty good job. Like, our music sounded pretty good. Like, we sounded pretty tight.
We sounded 18.
Our recordings were pretty decent. We were getting some shows where we were making, I mean, in those early days, we would make $100, $200, or sometimes more.
Yeah.
From like a PJ's Cafe show or a Silver Creek Lane show, just because we were putting them on ourselves.
Well, dude, yeah, I mean, that's something that bands don't do anymore. Like, back in the day, if we wanted a show, we made it happen. We found a way to play a show somewhere. We were always looking for places to do it. And, yeah, I mean, I remember PJ's Cafe before. It was probably close to, like, the last couple shows that they did where it was, I guess you could call it, sold out to the point that there were people that were getting charged half price to stand on the front porch and watch through the window.
Because it was at half capacity. I threw that show, and I remember throwing it and making the flyers at high school.
Because
I had, like, a business class, and I would design them and then make the flyers at high school and then print them out, print all these copies out. And I would make the flyers, like, as small as possible so I can get, like, five or six on a single
page. Out of a single 8x10 sheet.
Yeah, and then just do, you know, like, 25 sheets of paper.
Dude, kids these days do not respect or understand the hustle. Like,
the hustle.
No, seriously. I mean, the fact that, I mean, think about it.
A Facebook event does not do it justice.
Does not a marketing guru make you.
No.
Yeah, I mean, dudes in bands, girls in bands, like, whatever, musicians in general, you know, younger ones, they don't understand, like, the fact that at one point in time there was no social media, or it was just starting to build up. So, like, we would physically...
MySpace was brand new.
Yeah, we would physically print out stuff and walk around and hand it out. Like, if you want to talk about the definition of a fucking salesman,
yeah,
that's what we were.
Hey, vote for Donnelly.
Vote for Donnelly. People would run away.
Yeah. Well, and also, too, I'm going to play. I have been digging through the vaults here. This is going to be a special little podcast, guys, because I've been digging through the vaults of our history.
Oh,
and I have some
boy.
Songs.
What do you got?
I actually have some songs from TLB, Tears Like Bullets, our first band. And then I actually found some songs from every band since then. And we'll be playing them all on the show. Not every song, but one of each.
One from each? That's awesome. Where did you dig this up?
I dug it up on the internet.
Oh, wait a minute. You have one internet.
The thing is I invested recently in this thing called an internet. And I did a little downloading. Downloading, I think, is what it's called. Mm. So I was able to find it. And guys, I'm going to play for you a song called Skies on Fire.
Oh, boy.
From Tears Like Bullets, which is a funny, another little added story to that is it was mixed and recorded by Chris Browder from the band Mansions.
Yeah.
Mansions was like a huge deal on Doghouse.
Yeah.
For a little bit anyway.
Well,
I
think they just put something else out, but they're not with Doghouse anymore.
Well, how great is that? Like, how small world is that? Chris Browder from Mansions did this album for us.
It's so crazy.
So, guys... This is going to be Skies on Fire by Tears Like Bullets.
I hope the sun don't reach the clouds tonight.
guys, you heard it. That was Skies on Fire by Tears Like Bullets. That snare drum that you heard.
It sounds like a can of tuna fish getting smacked around.
Dude, I pride myself in my later years on having a very big, loud, beefy beef castle. Building a beef castle.
I think that recording is the reason that you do, though. Because you're like, I never want a snare drum to sound like that again.
That was like, yes, the can that the beef castle came in is what it sounds like to me.
Just hadn't been opened yet.
Just hasn't been opened yet. Untapped resource.
Dude, do you remember recording those drums?
Like, yeah, and no metronome.
No metronome.
We're just doing it.
You know who was your metronome?
Yes. Kevin was my metronome. He was my composer, conductor.
I stood on a cinder block because your bass drum kept moving.
Yeah, we recorded it in like an all-wooden spare bedroom, I think, like our all hardwood floor. Yeah.
In Browder's basement. And I just remember like hopping up on that because it was like getting real difficult to get it going. And I hopped up on that cinder block and I literally conducted you, arms flailing. Like you would have thought I was in like Fantasia or some shit. Cause I was just like,
you got to love how that was for real DIY. No metronome.
I don't think there was a click track at that time.
I don't even know what it was recorded on. I mean, I'm sure Pro Tools was around, but I'm sure he probably didn't have it.
Cakewalk or Sonar.
Probably just recording it in Cakewalk, guys. Yeah. But yeah, so that was Tears Like Bullets. That was a great time. And then shortly after that Dansky story, we had to go our separate ways for one reason or another.
Yep, there were a few reasons. Some people left, and then when they left, then you were offered.
I actually got a phone call that same day when everything went down, and I was asked to play in a band called A Suburban Blood Drive.
Yep.
So you guys, listeners, might have heard of that. But I went on and did that for a year.
Yep.
And in the meantime, what were you up to?
So you left and did that, and then I was kind of...
You left without even saying goodbye, and I was stuck.
Bones and I, or Armstrong, decided that we were going to try to make TLB still work. Do you remember that?
I actually remember seeing a basement show with Tears Like Bullets, and I think Chase played.
Yeah, it was Ryan Davis's basement.
Which, guys, listeners, just a couple weeks ago, Chase was on the podcast. He's in Isaac Mingo and the Nightbirds.
Dude, it's...
So that is a small world.
Yeah, small world. But, so Chase Coryell and Robbie Ward. So
Robbie Ward from Foxbat.
Yep. So it was me, Chase, Bones, and Robbie tried to continue Tears Like Bullets past that point, and it just didn't work out. So then we were kind of wondering what to do next, and then Robbie stayed with us, and then we formed, what would be called Monroe at that time. And so it was then, Monroe with Scott Gibson,
right.
whose dad is, did you know that his dad is, Kevin Gibson, who, writes for the Leo and is in a band called the Uncommon Houseflies.
Oh, well, Kevin Gibson, if you're listening, I would love to be a part of your publication.
Yeah. And him, yeah, I mean, he's awesome. He actually, fast forward a little bit, when we put out Trash Talk, we ended up on the cover of the Louisville Music Magazine or whatever.
Yeah, The Observer.
Yeah, the guy who did the interview was Scott Gibson's dad. So
there's a small world. Right there.
So anyway, but yeah, Scott Gibson, Robbie Ward, me, Bones, and then Wes Carroll.
Yeah. So it's kind of like half Edison J, because I think, didn't Scott Gibson play in Edison J?
Yep. Scott and Robbie both played in Edison J. So Edison J broke up, Tears Like Bullets broke up, and then became Monroe. And then we did that during the time that you were in ASBD, but then it took a turn, and then what happened?
I came in to save the day with my drum skills.
So we ended up flipping that back around, and then Sean rejoined. So then it was me, Sean, Bones, and Wes again.
And you stopped playing guitar at that point. And I remember briefly, Cody from ASBD played guitar with us.
Cody Williams.
And then that's when we found Joe Brock.
Yep. So then Cody, awesome dude. But he just, he had some other things going on in his life and wanted to move out. So so when that happened, Joe Brock was 14, who is now, playing in Foxbat
and mixing and mastering all these podcasts. I work with Joe. Everybody that listens knows that I've been working with Joe since day one. So, hey, big shout out to Joe here.
Yeah, JB. So then we knew Joe because his brother was Anthony, who was the drummer of Emmanuel at the time. And then so we brought Joe in. He was 14. The rest of us were so much older.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, we were probably in our 20s at that point.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was old enough to buy alcohol because I was always the youngest.
Joe may have been 15. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He may have been 15 years old.
Right. But he was still like too young to be hanging out with a bunch of 20 somethings.
Oh, yeah.
And that could buy alcohol.
The stuff we were doing, I'm sure. Joe was still a shredder even at that point. So we were like, yo, Joe. So he came in. And then Monroe was no more. We actually, even though it was still kind of the same group of dudes and we just kind of switched members, Sean had an idea for a band name. What was it, Sean?
I think I decided to name the band Heartbreak Kid, after the greatest wrestler of all time, but also a series of classic movies. And it's so funny because, like, right after that, they remade the movie.
They remade Heartbreak Kid.
And I was like, oh, they remade Heartbreak Kid. Now everybody is going to think we're named after the Ben Stiller movie.
I remember that shirt. Who? The one of the skeleton with the boombox.
I think Will from My Finest Hour designed that.
And it was the side.
Picture. I actually have that shirt still.
I don't. I want to. I want to accumulate merch from like every act I've ever been in. It'd be awesome. I'll see,
if I can find it, it's yours, buddy.
Cool.
But I definitely know. I know that I have it.
Speaking somewhere. Of Jared Howell, you said that if you listen to this, you said I could
Jared
have
Howell listens.
Tears Like Bullets t-shirt, and I'm going to need you to give that to me. Thanks.
So there you go, Jared. The gauntlet has been thrown down.
I'm sure it won't fit.
That's true. Everybody was like, except for me. I was like a 3X back then, and now I'm just like, you know, slightly smaller. Not really. Not,
I mean, if all
the older
were,
I get, the closer I get back to that.
But let's talk about the clothing that we wore back then. Our shirts were one size too small, if not two.
That's true.
If you were large, you probably wore a small shirt, and your jeans were not as tight as they. I think they're tighter now than they used to be.
Well, the men's jeans were tighter now, but we had to wear women's jeans back then.
Yeah, yeah.
All the way back then in 2007, 10 whole years ago. You had to get your tight jeans in the girls section.
I think some people still do that.
Yeah, that's probably true. So, so once Monroe dissipated, we became Heartbreak Kid.
Yep.
And that was kind of official. That was you, me, Chris, Joe, and Wes.
Yep.
And then Heartbreak Kid had...
We had a nice little run.
I agree. That was the Groove Cafe days. Yeah.
The Groove Cafe, I think, was like a step up because PJ's Cafe was awesome because we made it. We made that venue. Like, we actually, when I say, we physically did.
It was a bakery by day.
It was a bakery by day and a venue by night, and only on, like, Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, they only sold, like, scones and stuff inside, so I don't know how much business they actually did.
Very sweet ladies. Yeah. For some reason, awesome ladies. Listen to this, you guys were great.
Yeah. If you are, I hope they're listening. If you are listening, message me immediately.
Because we miss you.
Yeah.
but then the Groove Cafe came, which then you want to go real full circle. Talk about like all the bands that would play there and the fact that the guy that owned the Groove owned the music store,
yes.
Who we later on in life ended up working for at one point in time.
The Groove Cafe.
Greg Stark.
Nick Stark, Jeremy Stark.
Yep. Wonderful, wonderful dudes.
But the Groove...
Sometimes.
The Groove was a great place because that was like a whole new... Like a whole new line of bands came in. Yeah. That's when we started playing with like Jenny.
Jenny, yeah, yeah.
Not quite superheroes.
Yep.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah, they had that one song that was like dun 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 dun
bam.
Yeah. Oh, he meant that was Secret Lines.
The same song.
It was the same damn song.
But we graduated to the Groove Cafe headliners.
Yeah.
I feel like we were playing headliners at that point, that was always a big deal.
Headliners was such a great venue to play, and I really like, I mean, it's still there. It's still there, but I think they've changed their like crowd.
Their policy on that sort of thing.
They've changed their policies, and I think it's like owned by some new people, and they don't have the genre music that we played there ever.
Right.
At all. It's like I don't know. That was I like to call it tub thumping. It's just, you know, it's a folky Americana stuff.
It's so hot right now.
It's a big deal to some,
like the kind of Bonnaroo scene or something. Exactly.
That's what Headliners caters to now. Which, I mean, it's to each his own. It's whatever, but. I loved
that I'm a venue. Rocker, man, through and through.
AC/DC, Van Halen, not Van Hagar.
Def Leppard.
Def Leppard sucks.
But now that was another awesome time, just because now we have a whole new group of peers that we're playing with. We have places to hang out, like, and get in trouble in, like the Graveyard House.
Oh, man, the Graveyard House.
The infamous Apartment 40.
Apartment 40, to me, is a time in my life that if I could forget, I probably would.
why do you say that?
The amount of trouble that I got in at that point in time. Like, that's when the legal trouble began.
And that is when it all started.
That's where I'm in a rock band. I should get in as much trouble as possible. I kind of blame that on you, though.
Gave you a copy of The Dirt by Motley Crue.
Gave me a copy of The Dirt by Motley Crue, and I was like, this is what I want to fucking do.
You know, to be honest, that was like, with Heartbreak Kid, I feel like there was like, pre-me reading The Dirt and post-me reading The Dirt.
That's how it was for all of us. Yes. Like, as soon as we got introduced to that damn book.
I remember passing that book around, too. You read it, and I think even, like, Joe read it. I think, actually, Joe actually still has a copy of my copy of the book. And it was like, well, yeah, we want to be rock stars. And even our music kind of like
changed.
And we would like listen to Motley Crue all the time. And I had the DVDs, like the live DVD and the music video collection.
And Wes began eating it up like it was candy. He was just like, this is what I've always wanted to be.
But he's a shredder, man. He can play all of it. That came naturally.
Yeah, it came natural. So it was right up his alley to begin with. And as soon as we started going that, I don't know, like it's one of those things where you're like, I'm really glad that we got that part out of our system that early on. Because it was like 2006, 2007.
Probably sometime around then.
Because then, not shortly after that, we ended up calling that. And then Creatures was then born.
Yeah, that's true. But before we even get on to Creatures, okay, because...
We still got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I feel like I don't want to like skim over it. You know, I want to give people. But the thing is also too, like, I don't want to tell people all the embarrassing shit that we did.
Well, I mean, we did really stupid stuff. Like that was the time that I gave a girl a bottle of piss to drink.
That's true. That actually happened.
And you are a sweetheart, and I'm really sorry.
And we're not
going to
say we're not going to name that name.
No, we're not naming it, but it happened,
dude. Apartment 40. I remember most about going to Apartment 40 parties. One. There was always like 3,000 people there.
Yeah,
cops so never many. Got called.
And it was part of the IUS thing, like right next to Indiana University Southeast. So it was like you had a lot of college kids that would live in those apartments.
Maybe that was like the big reason why we never had more intervention.
Never
cop
got
intervention.
In trouble.
But I remember the whole place was just covered in styrofoam. Polar Pop cups.
Yeah.
Because everybody would get a fountain drink from Circle K, come in, and pour as much booze as possible into it.
I think if there was ever a time, like I was saying, if there was ever a time when you want to call us booze hounds, it was at that point in time in our life. I think the amount of, I mean, I remember CJ bringing in a bottle of Jaeger, like the pump top, like the big one.
Jaeger
the half gallon.
And was that at Apartment 40 or was that at Bray Boy's second?
No, that was Apartment 40.
Gotcha.
Because that was the first night that Bray Boy and I ever hung out, because now we're going to start bringing Bray Boy into the story. But she brought over this pump top of Jaeger, and just the two of us, me and John Bray Boy, drank the entire thing, and she was so pissed.
Dude, those were the days, man. Everybody was just there. I mean, and we had no business just partying as hard as we were.
I mean, it'd be Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. But we didn't have anything to do, because it's not like we actually had... like any kind of steady work either.
No, we didn't
at this
jobs.
Point, we were working at
we worked ServiceNet. At least I was.
So we were just like, we didn't have anything that we took seriously at all. And we were just going to this disgusting, I mean.
And John, it was disgusting,
dude,
bro.
And that's the thing. It was awesome. Thank you very much for letting us have people over. I appreciate you for letting us throw a party there. But after a while, it was getting rather slapdash.
Well, and that's when.
How can you clean when you have 3,000 people there every day?
And then I mean, that's when, like, we had never even considered the fact of anything other than booze, but that's when kind of drugs got involved too. So there was a lot of
not with you. That's one thing that I can say in retrospect. I'm like, you know what, Sean? You barely can keep your life together on the alcohol. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not even talking about just myself. But it was like that whole group. Like at one point, there never was any involvement of that sort. It was just all booze, and then
that's when we went Motley Crue on it.
Motley Crue.
I can't even say the dirt happened. That's when the dirt.
That's when the dirt happened. So, but yeah, it was a crazy, crazy time for a lot of us. And then, so Apartment 40, RIP.
Dude, yeah, RIP for that. And also, I found, like I said, digging through the vaults, digging through all the reel-to-reels that I have, and, you know, 8-tracks, I did find some Heartbreak Kid.
No way,
as
dude.
Well. And
I think it's still up on Pure Volume, too.
It very well could be. But Heartbreak Kid, and that album was recorded, the demos, we actually, fun fact, we had demos recorded by Matt Barber from Emmanuel.
Yep.
But we also had a full unreleased album.
Yeah, no, well, and then
that we never got, and yeah, I don't even know what happened to it.
We tried to do it. We had a whole full-length record written, and he recorded it on ADATs. That was still like when analog tapes were still a
thing.
Yeah,
and if anybody doesn't know what an ADAT is, imagine recording your album onto a VHS cassette, because that's what it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that we never got all of that, but also, too, we didn't pay for all of that, so that's water.
He probably just destroyed it.
It's probably, you know what, he probably moved on with his life, had a successful
music career.
But I remember paying for...
I'm pretty sure paid him for what we did.
But these demos here, the ones that I definitely know we have, that I have found in the vault, I remember paying for those demos with a Walmart gift card.
Are you serious?
I remember, like, paying for a portion of it. Like, look, I have, like, a Walmart gift card for, like, $75. Will you take that instead of money?
And he didn't
even
hesitate.
And he just looks at me and he's like, you know what, man? Yeah, I guess so.
But that was when Emmanuel had that studio, because that was another place that we really partied hard, too.
Was the studio,
The studio on Preston.
And they had some pretty cool shows there, too.
Yeah, they would have shows there. And then, not only that, other bands would practice there, because I know ASBD practiced there for a while.
Well, and also, too, Drake Studio downtown.
717
Market. 717
Market
was where we recorded the demos, I believe. And then the full length was done at the Preston Studio.
Yep. The full length was recorded at the Preston Studio, but the 717 Market stuff was what we actually ended up, that's what people heard.
Right. And I think that is what everybody's going to hear now again. And I think the song that I'm going to play. Let's just do the album opener. Let's do "And They Said We'll Never Make It."
I think that was my favorite one off of it anyway.
Yes. This is, and guys, let me preface this. This is when we didn't really know what we were doing. This is Kevin deciding to scream
for the first time.
For the first time, Kevin being a front man for the first, you know, one of the first times, no guitar. Because you always played guitar before that.
TLB, I played guitar, and then even before that in other bands and stuff, I always did. But yeah, that's like Monroe's where it started. But then Heartbreak Kid's like kind of where it really took off, I think.
Yeah. So we're going to play "And They Said..." And they said we'd never make it. Man, that really rolls off the tongue.
That was also the time when every song had a name that was like 5 sentences long.
Yeah, that's true. Guys.
Fallout Boy and all that stuff started coming around.
Thanks, Fallout Boy, and Under Oath and all those bands that had to have a paragraph for a song title.
Yep.
All right, guys, this is "And They Said We'd Never Make It" by Heartbreak Kid.
Boom. It's time to go!
Let's just play out my most blessed day.
And there you go. And they said We'd Never Make It by Heartbreak Kid.
That's a classic.
That is a classic. Man, those screams.
They're so bad.
We're just working it out.
Too bad we didn't show anything of the Monroe stuff because it tried to sound like a pterodactyl.
But yeah, there you go. So Heartbreak Kid. And that's probably one thing I wanted to touch on was Biebs Fest.
Dude, Biebs Fest.
That song was probably played at a Biebs Fest.
I'm sure it was.
Or probably wasn't, because I remember 2 years in a row we didn't get to play because by the time...
The fuzz.
Yes. Biebs Fest was the greatest thing. An all-day DIY music festival.
Alex Beeler.
I got to give a big shout-out to you on that because you were making it happen just... On your own, you know what I'm saying?
Like, through the biggest festival, I mean, it really was like it was a
like
downright
30
festival.
Yeah. Bands that would play local and some touring and
in his dad's yard.
In his dad's yard, but yeah, by the time we would play like 8 or 9 o'clock, you know,
they
usually it was
down.
Already shut her down. Remember the time Jenny played and like that whole balcony of people. Like, they had that balcony up there, and like, the balcony just collapsed.
It just fell. Yeah.
That was crazy.
It collapsed on them. We did get to play 1 year. I remember specifically getting to play 1 year, because I was like, man, it's, you know, they've got us playing so late, and everybody, I mean, you're talking, like, it was Sodom and Gomorrah out there. Like,
it was definitely Woodstock, like, yeah. Our little version of Woodstock.
It was, everybody was hammered, you know, people were off doing whatever, and so, like, when it came time to play, though, I remember, like, looking out, being like, holy shit, dude, there's a lot of people here.
Man, that was a great, like the best time of the summer because everybody that was anybody in the local area was there.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Whether you played or you just liked to go to shows. So there would be 400 or 500 people, cars all along the,
yeah, well, that
everywhere.
Whole, that whole part of his like front, I guess, well, side yard. Because there's like the house is set far back, but then you had like that like a cabin or whatever it was. But then all that whole yard was nothing but cars. It was just lined up the whole thing.
So, dude, shout out to Alex Beeler for having Biebs Fest.
But when was the last year that they did? I think they tried to do it again 1 year, and it just didn't happen.
I don't know. But if Biebs Fest ever wants to be resurrected, I feel like we could do it a lot more responsibly.
I think we could, yeah. Now that we're adults.
Now that we're, you know, in our 30s instead of in our 20s, I feel like we could definitely make that happen.
Yeah. I just remember seeing Ryan Davis running around in the shortest pair of jean shorts I've ever seen. It looked more like a loincloth.
It was a denim loincloth, guys. Picture this. But, dude, yeah. And if you do one, you got to get a manual. Back together.
Yeah, at least for one night.
And we got to try to get Secret Lives back together.
Dude, Secret Lives, yes.
I wanted to touch on them. The reason why I just name dropped them is just because they were like probably the two bands that I feel like influenced our sound, not just then, but even like all throughout, like Uh-Huh Baby Yeah and everything.
Yeah, very much.
You got an Emmanuel and a Secret Lives sound, but they were the ones that kind of gave us our first.
Well, they gave us guidance.
Breaks.
Yeah, they gave us guidance, and they were both bands that were doing really well at the time. You had Emmanuel that was on Vagrant, you had Secret Lives who was on Victory. Well, before that they were on what was it? Astromagnetics, which was owned by Jeff Rickley's label. Yeah. And so you had both these bands that we were, you know, just became really good friends with, and they gave us the time of day to be like, yo, you know, you guys are up and coming, and we would like to help you out as much as possible.
Yeah, let's like just, hey, we'll take you out on your first shows, we'll take you out, your first tour, and we'll take you out on, you know, these out-of-town gigs and stuff like that.
Well, then, I mean, Secret Lives did what? They dropped that second record that they did on Victory, and then invited us to come play with them in Charlotte at Tremont Music Hall.
Yeah.
It was like us, Harvard,
who went on big business on Equal Vision.
Yeah, they went on to be real big. You had us, Harvard, and Secret Lives play at Tremont Music Hall, and it was a one-off. We did two shows because
we did Ground Zero too in Spartanburg. Yeah. That old, almost like, I think at one time it was a strip club.
Was it Ground Zero? Was it New Brooklyn Tavern?
Well, we definitely played at Ground Zero in Spartanburg. And I definitely remember that place used to be, and that place holds like a bunch of stuff, like different live shows and, wrestling, you know, I'm into wrestling and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So like, I feel like Ground Zero is like kind of like our Expo 5.
Yeah.
But at one point I'm sure it was a strip club just by the, just by how it's decorated on the inside.
I remember playing UNC Asheville.
Yeah. Playing the University of North Carolina, Asheville.
It was outside. They had a stage built outside, and but it was the but when we played, it was like those release shows for the Weekend Warriors album, and just because they were
still
friends,
like one of my favorite albums of all time.
It's such a great record. If you've never listened to it, you should take the time to do so. If you're listening for real,
yeah, especially if you're like a band out there on the road and you want to hear an album that like every day you can just listen to
front to back,
front to back. No pauses. You'll be 100 miles down the road by the time it's over.
And it's a very it's at least for us, it's such a nostalgic record.
Yeah.
I mean, I took a lot of influence from all of that. I know you did watching Travis play drums. Travis Moss, dude.
Probably one of the greatest drummers I've ever seen play live.
And I don't think he even touches drums anymore.
Travis, if you're listening, I'd love to have you on the show. Guys, or any of the dudes in Emmanuel, I want to have you on the show too.
Travis, Josh, Jim, even dude,
Tucker,
Brian,
Tucker, and Josh and I have like a whole newfound bond because in our 30s we love wrestling, so we still we talk about wrestling quite.
Dude, Tucker's
quite
a pharmacist now. Have you seen him? Like his pictures in
he
his
looks
white
fantastic.
Lab coat. You look wonderful, dude.
Bro, you look like you belong on a Walgreens ad.
Yeah, straight up.
For real.
I'm going to prescribe you some shit.
I've got a prescription. It's called Secret Lives, Weekend Warriors, Emmanuel soundtrack to a head rush.
Speaking of which, Brian actually posted something today, or maybe it was last night, saying how much he missed the Secret Lives family and like tagged all the dudes. And a bunch of people posted on that status saying reunion. And he said, and I quote, no one knows what the future holds.
If that happened, I would be there. Guys, set up the show. I will be there. If you need me to drive in, fly in, I'll do it.
Absolutely.
I'll make that happen. All right, guys. Well, we're winding down here for part one, but stick around. I've not done this before, but we're only halfway through the legend.
We're doing, yeah.
of Kevin and Sean. So... Of Kevin and the Kevins.
Yeah.
So
we're 13 years of just debauchery.
We're only halfway through. So tune in next week for part two with my conversation with Kevin Fletcher. And yeah, let me know what you think. Like, subscribe, follow, all that sort of thing. iTunes, if you like what you hear, give me that 5-star review. I appreciate it. Maybe say a few words. Maybe like, dude, podcast rocks or whatever you want to say. That seems.
Maybe it doesn't.
Yeah. Maybe say, hey, podcast above average or average, you know, whatever you want to say. But yeah, we definitely appreciate it. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week for part two. Kevin, what do you want to say to everybody before we head out?
I can't wait for part two. I'm kind of ready.
All right. You heard it first. This has been the Sean versus Wild podcast.